Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Are you guys curious what's happening within the Algorand ecosystem? Today, I have the CTO of the Algorand Foundation, John Woods, to talk about Algorand and what they are doing, what they are building, and what their roadmap looks like for 2024. They are empowering a dynamic, inclusive, and borderless global ecosystem based on the Algorand blockchain, which focuses on fast, carbon zero, secure, and decentralized aspects. So be sure to watch the full episode. Check out all the links in the description below. And enjoy. What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of BlockHash, Exploring the Blockchain, episode 372. Today, we have John Woods, CTO of the Algorand Foundation, to talk about Algorand and the foundation. John, welcome to the show. Happy to have you here, man. How you doing?
Hey, thank you for having me. Absolutely love the production value on your side. Love the sign. It's amazing.
Thank you. We're heavily invested.
I need to start doing that stuff. Great to be here. Thank you very much for having me. And being on a platform like yours allows us to talk about the work we're doing, which is my pleasure.
Absolutely. Before we dive into it, would love to know more about yourself, if you want to share a little bit about your background and sure. What you've done prior to the Algorand Foundation.
Yeah, certainly. My background is, I guess, my university degree is in computer engineering. So always being a geeky kid, playing with computers, just really a computer hobbyist. And so early jobs, I tended to be a software developer. I worked for Ericsson, built systems in C and C++, which was a great baptism of fire as to what real development is like, because Ericsson have huge code bases. Then we spent a little bit of time in finance. I worked for Citi as a Forex trader. I worked in London as a derivatives analyst. But all the while I was kind of still building software in the background, because it's been my love since I was a teenager or whatever, or early teenager. And then I kind of moved into software architecture and slowly into applied cryptography over the last kind of decade or so. And so I've worked at the European Central Bank, worked for the Irish Central Bank. Most recently, and I guess most pertinent to this podcast, I worked on Ethereum professionally and led software architecture and applied crypto for Consensus. I was the chief architect on Cardano for a year or so, and I led applied cryptography there. And then more recently, of course, I've taken my role at the Algorand Foundation as the chief technology officer. So my role there, as with any CTO, is to set strategy and vision around our tech things, whether that's in-house stuff like running infrastructure and our tech stack, or whether that's broader stuff for the ecosystem around how do we do dev tools or what are the ecosystem things that we're going to back from a tech point of view.
Right. Any overlap or differences that you see, previously working with Cardano and now working with the Algorand Foundation, anything that's similar or different?
I would say it's been invaluable working across different ecosystems. I'd say as well, I would only take a role in a project that I felt personally compelled by. And so there are projects out there that I'm not as interested in. And I think having worked on Ethereum, which is, I think, by all measures, although it has its caveats in terms of its people will criticize its speed or cost or things like that, I think if you look at it objectively, I think it's a pretty incredible technology that they've put together and the team have worked on. I loved working on Cardano. It's been incredible. It taught me so much. And I think when I moved to Algorand, which I also consider, of course, a wonderfully brilliant project, I think having worked across those different ecosystems allows you to approach problems and decisions in a more malleable way. So I'm less hardline about things, and I try to kind of think, what would they do at Cardano here? What would the Ethereum choice be here? And I think that helps mold better decision making. I think that experience of working across the ecosystem. I'm also kind of just generally not one for kind of maximalism. I mean, sure. There are certain projects I'm extremely passionate about. Algorand is one, Monero is another, Cardano is another. But I don't think it's healthy to have, you know, maximalism about things, because it, you know, what you will find in life is that, or not in life, it's a bit philosophical, but what you'll find in these cryptocurrencies is the decisions that are made from an architectural point of view or an engineering point of view that yield certain positives like speed or finality or whatever will also have a corresponding maybe a side effect that may not be desirable. And so, of course, most of these blockchains are trying to optimize for certain solutions. And I think what I'm trying to say is each one of them does many things well.
Yeah, I think maximalization, especially in this industry, is a very bad mindset to have, you know, just because there's so many different great things being done in so many different chains. I mean, that's just the truth of it. You know, none of them are perfect, but they're all doing different things. So it's better to foster, I think, a multi-chain understanding and sense of things rather than just say one thing is the best and that's it. Everything else is going to disappear. It's not reality.
I totally agree. And so I would also say that on the other side of things, this is my personal opinion, not the opinion of the Algorand Foundation or anything, but I don't think we're going to see a world where there's thousands of layer one blockchains that are successful. I think that's unlikely. I suspect just like, because I liken these blockchains, especially the programmable ones, which of course Bitcoin, Monero are not programmable, but the programmable ones feel to me like open source operating systems where the code is run in a decentralized context rather than just on your local computer. And so in many senses, if you look at, you know, the landscape of operating systems, you'll see, of course, there's BSD, there's Unix, there's Linux, there's macOS, there's Windows. Then there's smaller operating systems that fill niche use cases, embedded operating systems, etc. I suspect it'll emerge something like that on the blockchain side, where we'll probably have 5 to 10, I'm pulling that number out of the air, but like a smallish number of kind of chains that end up being longstanding, and many of them will come and go otherwise, I think.
So if Algorand was an operating system, which one do you think you'd be?
So of course, everyone wants to probably say this, but I like to think that we are the macOS of operating systems. And the reason I say that is because I don't necessarily think we're there yet, to be quite honest with you, of course. I mean clearly macOS is 100x more mature, but like, what I'm trying to target, or what we're trying to target at the foundation and indeed within the ecosystem, is a great user experience for normal people, as in, you know, people. And so our users should not even know they're using Algorand, in my view, for it to be super successful. They should benefit from the virtues it provides, the self-sovereignty, the decentralization, the ability to kind of provide like the trustless execution environment, but they should at the same time not really even know that they're doing that, not using the underlying technology. And for our developers, it needs to be a fantastic developer experience where it's nearly fun, right? It's like they want to play with, they want to design the apps for Algorand. And then finally, in terms of the actual protocol itself, so, you know, the blockchain itself, where the code gets uploaded as bytecode, and where you have the applications run, that needs to be, as macOS, of course, is a BSD Unix variant, it needs to be that Linux level or Mac or Unix level of reliability, where the blockchain isn't up and down like a yo-yo, where you can know that it's going to be there, where your transactions are going to get processed, where there is no stalling. And so that's the target. Great user experience with the bedrock reliability of something like Linux.
Would you say that's also part of maybe what makes Algorand stand out or makes it different?
I would say that, you know, I mean, you know, objectively, Algorand's had no downtime in the number of years that it's been it's been in operation, and it's processed over a billion transactions in that time. And so I think that that's pretty great. I mean, the other thing is, of course, you never want to kind of put all your eggs in one basket and say we're the chain that's never had any problems, because software is hard and decentralized software is even harder. And so it's not beyond the bounds of possibility, of course, that Algorand sees some downtime, as most systems on planet Earth would see. But I think what's more important is that, generally speaking, that it's considered reliable. And so reliability to me, well, there's three kind of things that I optimize for. Security, Okay, classically, we'd say Bitcoin is extremely secure, as an example, with the heaviest hash rate. But we should be optimizing towards security. Scalability, another classic one in the blockchain space. But these blockchains, if they're going to be decentralized operating systems, as I'm kind of saying, they need to be able to handle workloads at an international level of demand. And then reliability. So security, scalability, and reliability. I think Algorand has all three. We can improve, though, in some of these. I think security can be increased in Algorand. And how do we do that? We increase the amount of Algo that's staked. I think, you know, the underlying primitives are perfectly strong. But, of course, we always want to see the most amount of Algo staked. The more Algo staked, the more secure the network is. And we're going to get there by doing things like incentivizing consensus so that you get paid to run a consensus node. You get paid to do the staking. At the moment, you don't get paid. And so this is, I think, keeping some people out of the game because it's only the altruistic folks who are currently involved in staking. You got scalability, and we're looking at that. Like, we're already at 10,000 TPS, which is strong, right? Visa globally is kind of on a normal day is doing 7,000 to 8,000 TPS. So we're at the races there. But, you know, scalability has got to be more than just that. It's got to be scalability in terms of not just TPS, but also in terms of decentralization, in terms of peer-to-peer networking. So we're moving to a peer-to-peer style network where we won't have relays anymore. So at the moment, Algorand's data flows through relays like a ring road around a city with the consensus inside. Mm-hmm. We're going to be moving to a peer-to-peer so that the consensus nodes themselves, or participation nodes, as we call them in our documentation, will have this kind of peer-to-peer data transit. But also for things like data availability. I mean, it's got to be easy to get data out of the Algorand node or to ask the node something. And so that's important too. And then in terms of reliability, of course, we have a platinum clean sheet on that. But again, how do we maintain that? The answer is very careful decision-making around the architectural choices and those type of things. But yeah, they're the things that I think we optimize for, and hopefully we get there. I think it's a very strong choice in terms of a platform for people thinking of building enterprise-grade apps that require decentralization. And if I was to look at the opposite side and say, what's bad? I would say two things. Number one, our developer tool chain has not traditionally been great. We've had a wonderful computer, if you want to call it a decentralized computer that's ready to be built on, but the way you program that computer hasn't been great. It's been maybe academically correct and valid, and you can do anything you want to do with it, but like no one has time to write apps in assembly. And that's what we were basically asking people to do. And so we've moved away from that assembly now to a truffle-like tool, if people will know that from Ethereum, a command line tool that helps you build, test, and deploy super easy. And then, of course, our upcoming change to make the canonical language of the smart contract platform to be Python, which is, of course, cheap to build, cheap to maintain. Lots of people understand it. It's very simple. And so this, I think, is going to see a huge influx for Algorand. So that's one thing that wasn't great, dev tooling. We're changing it to be great. The second thing that's not been so great after the dev tools, which we think we have an answer to now, is awareness. And so Algorand has just not really been in the zeitgeist. If you go on Twitter and you look at what people are kind of saying, which platform do you prefer? It's always like Solana, Cardano, Ethereum. We don't seem to be at the on people's lips. And so we're changing that. We've got a totally new strategy around how we're going to try to grow grassroots awareness, both inside like the Algorand ecosystem where people are already kind of aware. We want to keep those users informed, but also critically outside of the Algorand ecosystem. And even being on shows like this, it helps us to try to build awareness that, hey, you know, we've got, I think, a very cool project over here that has a lot of, that's really quite viable. If you're thinking about building on blockchain, then maybe you want to check it out because it's got some smart people working on it.
In regards to Python, is that something that you guys are switching to relatively soon, like here in 2023 or into next year? What's the timeline kind of look like that for devs?
Yeah, so we're going to have a developer preview available. For Python, we're going to have a developer preview available this month. The guys are telling me it might be early December, so it might be the first week of December. But like within the next 30 days, we should have a developer preview available. And so we're saying, hey, don't use this for production code. But, you know, it's there if you want to play with it, pull it apart, see what you think. Okay, and then for cool. The full release, where we're bringing more than just Python, it's huge, but we're bringing more than Python. We're bringing a bunch of bells and whistles around test and debug and other things to extend further the work we've done with AlgoKit, which is what we've called our tool suite. It's on version like 1.6 now. We're going to be moving it to 2.0, and 2.0 drops in February in 2024. So about 3 months away, we have the full release with everything and things out of beta, and we have this developer preview this month or early next month for Python.
The other question I had was on staking, you know, how you guys, you know, really trying to push for that to get more people to stake within the ecosystem. What's the key to that?
I'll just quickly kind of mention Algorand has about 10 billion algo tokens. And of course, some of them will be lost because people have lost their keys, as with any cryptocurrency. But at a total, it's 10 billion. In reality, it's less than that now. And so the more of that is staked, if all of it is staked, then the network is not defraudable because, you know, you can basically, you can't attack a network where all the stakers are honest. Okay. Completely secure. And so at the moment we have about 15 to 20% of the total supply being staked at any one time. And so really we want to try to push those numbers up. I mean, it's still a ton of algo, it's billions of algo, but like the more the better. And so I'd like to see those numbers around 30 to 40% of the supply. I don't expect, of course, that everyone will stake. And so how do we achieve that? So right now, you know, one of the magic pieces of Algorand is the consensus algorithm. And so it uses a cryptographic primitive known as the VRF. And think of this thing like, you know, if I said a cryptographic primitive, what are other examples that people will know? Well, encryption is a thing. You can encrypt and decrypt things. That's a primitive. Digitally signing something, that's a primitive. You can digitally sign something and verify it. And then this VRF is another one that falls in. It's like another Lego brick in the cryptographic toolbox. And it's very powerful because what it lets us do is it lets us select someone from the sea of people who are out there staking randomly. So probabilistically, based on the amount of stake that they have, we can kind of, weighted by the probability of their stake, the more stake, the more likely that they are to be picked, the less stake, the less likely. But still, anyone could be picked. And no one can predict ahead of time who is going to be picked next. So this is important from a security point of view. So you can't just go and attack the next person who's going to be producing a block. And so we have this wonderful VRF. It's super smart mathematical and cryptographic primitive. It allows us to select someone from the sea of stakers. It allows us to select someone else to validate what the blocks that have been proposed. And ultimately, it allows the entire consensus process to go take a block, propose some transactions in it, validate the transactions, and add it to the blockchain in 3 seconds flat, and to do so in a way, and this is one of Algorand's kind of like you know, most impressive features, it does so in a way that there's never any short forks in the blockchain. 100% of the nodes will agree on each block as it's added to the chain. There's never a short fork or a block height battle as you might see on Ethereum or other chains. And so what this means is that we have instant finality. You don't have to wait for confirmations. Super cool. This also means that the node requirements, or the computer requirements, I should say, to execute consensus are actually quite low. So this VRF, like running this VRF, is very, very, it's very elegant, primitive. It doesn't take many cycles. It's not going to heat your computer up. And so you can kind of run Algorand consensus on a Raspberry Pi. You need to have 8 gigabytes of RAM, but you can run it on a Raspberry Pi. You can indeed certainly run it on a regular old you know, Intel or Apple Silicon device or AMD device or ARM device. So it doesn't take much to run this thing. So why aren't we seeing more people stake? I think that the answer is, you know, we're not incentivizing it. So on Bitcoin, Cardano, et cetera, people get rewarded for producing blocks or delegating their stake. That's not the case currently with Algorand. And so we rely upon the altruistic behavior of holders to basically get off their butts and turn on a computer and start staking their algo for the good of the network. And so, although that may theoretically, you know, sound good, I think empirically we've noticed that that doesn't seem to be, there's too much friction for a person who has to understand what the node is, have the capability to download the software, set it up, run it. That's too much, and then leave the computer on permanently. It's just, we're not seeing people do it. So what we're going to do is we're going to move over the course of the next year to an incentivized consensus model. And people can see this. If you go to the Algorand GitHub, it's been openly discussed and openly developed. And we're going to be releasing a paper on this, like a 10-pager that's going to describe how this stuff is going to work in more simple language soon. But this is going to be a tectonic shift in terms of Algorand's philosophical ethos, its economic approach. And so what we're going to be doing is we're going to be paying people to produce blocks. They're going to get paid from a pool of funds that will exponentially decay, and eventually it'll be paid from fees. And so this hopefully will be a plan that turns Algorand into a secure, robust, scalable, and most importantly, sustainable blockchain that is run on the economic model of the fees eventually.
What are some things that you guys are excited about within the Algorand ecosystem? It could be applications being built, use cases, it could be, whatever, you know, in particular. I'm just kind of curious, you know, to give people an idea, you know, what some things are that are happening on chain that, you know, people can look forward to trying out and applying to everyday life.
Sure. I think the real world assets category is one that we're seeing a lot of use in. This month, we've seen kind of like our high, I think it was high, I don't want to quote, misquote, but I think the highest ever volume we've seen in terms of that category. And so this is like, you know, tokenization of plane tickets, tokenization of houses, this kind of stuff. And that's very exciting. My general ethos is this. I don't like to pigeonhole. And I felt the same when I was working at Cardano, by the way. I don't like to pigeonhole blockchains into having specific use cases too tightly, as in I don't like this idea that, okay, we're the gaming chain or we're the sports chain or whatever. I think you should be trying to build the chain to be as agnostic to the application as possible. Because if you look at what we deliver, we're delivering a platform that can execute arbitrary code in a decentralized context, But the languages that we provide people, so whether it's Teal or Python, as we're going to roll out, or indeed Haskell on Plutus, or Plutus / Haskell on Cardano, these languages are Turing complete. They allow you to express any type of business logic you wish. So I think blockchain developers of major chains like Algorand should be focused on making it like the Linux or Mac OS of blockchains, so that it can run any type of application. And in terms of things where I'm excited about, I think consensus incentivization is certainly one. The release of AlgoKit 2.0, because quite literally it was only a year ago that we were asking people to build Teal-based apps, like assembly-level language, if your users or if your viewers are familiar with this, very, very low-level, you know, horrible to use, and that was the only way to build apps on Algorand. 1 year later, we have a developer experience which is similar to like Node.js or similar to Rust with Cargo, where you can just do Cargo init and you'll be able to do AlgoKit init and it will just set up your project. AlgoKit build and it will just build your project. AlgoKit deploy, it will deploy it to the testnet or the mainnet. We've got CI/CD support in there for continuous integration and delivery or deployment. We have really robust test suites. And very soon we're going to be having, you know, this month or early next month, we'll have the ability to express your business intent in Python. And so super excited about that. It's been transformational, quite literally, because users may be excited about holding a token because they're speculating on it or whatever. But if a blockchain is really a platform for execution of apps and you don't have an app store full of apps or you don't have a platform full of apps, you've blown it. And so we really need to make sure that we make it as easy as possible for devs to be able to bring their vision to the platform and that it's without friction. Previously, if a developer is on Ethereum, they look at Algorand and think, oh, that's cool, I might try it out. When they hear they have to learn Teal, they're like, ugh, whatever. Now they'll come, they'll be able to kind of go, okay, yeah, Python, I can probably muster through that on my own. And then finally, I would just say that there's, you know, one other thing I'm really excited about and I think is meaningful is our move from relay-based network to a peer-to-peer-based network. And so you're always trying to balance speed and the transactions per second and all this kind of stuff with your engineering choices. But ultimately, if you build software like Algorand, the only reason people build on these decentralized networks is because they benefit from the decentralization, the self-sovereignty, and I guess the disintermediation that these platforms bring. And if the platforms have caveats where they could be improved in terms of decentralization, I think that that's something that you should optimize for. Because ultimately, application builds on blockchain are more complicated than application builds off blockchain. And so we're asking people to take to use these technologies because they bring a certain level of veracity around the product. But we've got to make sure that we are making good on that in terms of the actual network topology. Don't just say it's decentralized. It's got to be decentralized. And so the move from, we have at the moment about 110 relays and they're run by 20 companies or 25 companies. So it is functionally decentralized. But better than that is where the data can move from consensus node or participation node, as we call it, to participation node directly. And so it doesn't rely on any relay node or middleman. And so that's something that I very much care about and we're very excited for.
Very nice. A question I get very often from a lot of people doesn't apply specifically to Algorand, but it does apply to Algorand. And I think, sure, you know, most major chains, is there's a lack of applications for whatever reason that work or that are applicable to mobile devices. And a lot of this stuff is developed and usable for laptops, desktop. But there's just a lack of, I think, development for your mobile phone, you know, what most people have access to and have sure access to the internet with, you know, whether it's an application like a Dex or there's wallets, but I mean, like being able to trade better, being able to get loans better, being able to play games, being able to do all these things without, you know, actually having to have a laptop. I think it holds back a lot of Web3 in general. Just kind of curious, you know, is that something you guys are also tackling at Algorand, you know, trying to build more application specific things for mobile?
Sure. I think mobile is super important. By the way, you know, I'm a big fan. I've just got my new iPhone, big fan of this. I love my mobile phone. And so I use it more than I use my desktop or my laptop. I know what you say is true. Let's think about it for a second, right? Blockchains are run, of course, on regular computers, not cell phones, because of the fact that they require lots of data in and out, and they obviously require a permanent power supply. So typically they're run on desktop level computers, the nodes that make up the blockchain. And so what is an app on a blockchain, or a dApp, as some people call it, a decentralized app? It's of course like a piece of compiled code, whether it's on Ethereum or it's on Cardano as Plutus interpreted, or whether it's on Algorand as AVM bytecode. It's a piece of compiled code that gets put on the chain. And so what's interesting here is we have done all of this decentralization. We've built this decentralized network. Someone's written code. We've compiled the code. It now exists on all these decentralized computers all over the world on each one of the blockchains. And then the way you go and interact with it is by going to a website hosted on Amazon, probably. And so that irony is not lost on me. Of course, what one could do is go into a terminal, form a transaction manually, and then ping it off into the internet. And of course, you could have a decentralized interaction point with these blockchains. But people don't do that. They tend to use websites. And so that's fine once you know that the website is well run. It doesn't take very much to bring that web front end from a traditional Web 2 front end down to the mobile device. All you need to do is make sure that your Web 2 front end that users currently use has the right API hooks for your iOS or Android client to be able to talk to. Or indeed, you could, this probably wouldn't be a very, very elegant approach, but you could have the node, the phone run a node, or indeed have the phone point directly at a node that's hosted in your backend and do all of the transaction orchestration right on your phone. And so there's nothing stopping this. But for whatever reason, I think it's an extra layer of complexity that most projects haven't gotten to solve yet. In terms of AlgoKit, we had nothing prior to AlgoKit that helped you on the front end. Now with AlgoKit, I think it was 1.5 or so, we brought React. So we took the frameworks that are already there. I'm not going to start my own UI framework, but we took React, and now within the AlgoKit tool suite, you're able to actually build a React-based web front end. And so absolutely, we're thinking about how we could optimize that for mobile. Particularly, we hear from folks in Africa quite a lot, I think, and South Africa and parts of Asia, where mobile phones are, some homes only have cell phones. They only have smartphones. They don't have a desktop computer. And so particularly those regions have asked me that question. I've been asked that question quite a lot. And so, yeah, I think it's something that has high value, something we should do, something we're not doing yet, but something that we're aware of and is on the roadmap. But I guess maybe just to come back to the description I gave,
yeah,
the jump from the current website style UI down to a mobile phone is actually not that big. It's not a big gap to bridge.
Yeah, I feel like it's one of those gaps that will be the most important to bridge at some point. I mean, I live down here in Latin America, in Colombia, sure, so I hear it all the time. You know, okay, more people have mobile devices than they do laptops or anything else, iPads, anything. Sure. Everything's about the smartphone. So I feel like, you know, in places like Latin America, Africa, Southeast Asia, many places in the world where I think that the mobile phone is more dominant, you know, that just hasn't been tapped into in the web industry. Web3 industry, I think, is much as it can be.
Yeah, absolutely. And by the way, absolutely, we have folks in Africa that work for the foundation, and we hear it directly from them. It's a cultural thing. In many of these countries, they just don't do desktop computing. I think as well, it comes down to user experience. You want to make it easy. Mm-hmm. Pretty much everything we do at the foundation can be, well, on the tech side, boils down to making the user experience better. You know, whether we're pushing open source libraries to be changed, whether we're integrating MetaMask, whether we're building things like AlgoKit, whether we're hiring DevRel people to work with these projects, it all boils down to making it easier for the end user, easier for the developer, so that people slide into Algorand because it's easy to be here. If they have to climb over a gate to get in, they're not going to do it.
Another question before we start wrapping up the episode and everything. We kind of touched on it a little bit earlier, but I want to kind of come back to it because I do think it's important. And it's the idea of a multi-chain ecosystem. Sure. We know maximalism is something that is, in my opinion, at least, I think it's detrimental. I don't think people should be all locked in on one idea. And I think most of Web3 understands that. You know, maybe we can separate the Bitcoin maximalist. That's maybe just a different thing. It's hard not to be sometimes. But you know, being able to work cross chain, have interoperability to share asset ecosystems, benefits in different places, I think is really helpful. Just curious where Algorand's mindset is in terms of interoperability, multi-chain, and working with other ecosystems in areas where maybe it's beneficial.
Sure. We are deeply focused and deeply care about interop. I think it's essential. I'm going to give some tangible examples of how we actually are rather than just say it in a second. Just like I mentioned earlier, and again, you know, I keep maybe banging on about this, but this idea that these blockchains are like open source and decentralized operating systems. You know, when you're interacting with someone, when you're playing the finals, which is a new game that I found, which is pretty great, or when no matter what you're playing, what video game you're playing, or even if you're editing a Google Doc, right? You don't know whether the person on the other side that's editing the doc at the same time is on a Mac, Linux, or Windows computer. And you don't care. And so that's where we have to get to. These blockchains, the various ones, I mean, some of them are so great at certain things, like Monero is particularly good at privacy. Before that, there's lots of consequences in their architectural design. So it's never going to be a smart contracts platform. Okay, so that's kind of something, a choice that blockchain has made. Mm-hmm. But generally, for the programmable chains, the Cardanos, the Ethereums, the Algorands, the Solanas, these chains are silos of value, silos of network, silos of interaction, you know, of human social interaction. And so they need to be very much bridged, just like liquidity gets bridged between dark pools. And so I think it's very important that that the liquidity can flow between these various platforms, because some of them are going to be good at some things and others are going to be good at others. So you might look at Cardano and say, well, there are times when a UTXO-based programming model can yield an application which really sings on Cardano that maybe doesn't work as well in an account-based model that, say, Ethereum or Algorand. And vice versa, you go say, well, certainly, you know, for swaps, maybe, for example, an account-based programming model is much easier to implement swaps or whatever than say, a UTXO-based model. And so being able to bridge these transactions and bridge the liquidity, I think, is absolutely essential. I would go so far as to say, one of the things I think is killing interop is competing standards. And so there's lots of examples I could give, but like Algorand has state proofs, and they're kind of like a way to prove the state of the chain in a very succinct mathematical proof that's about 4 megabytes. And it's quite sexy because it's post-quantum. It uses post-quantum cryptography and a whole bunch of exciting modern mathematics. We use that. But I go to layer zero and they have a different way to do it. I go to Chainlink and they have their own tech to do it. I look at Cardano and they have Mithril. And so we're drowning in standards. And we have to, like, I think Bitcoin did a reasonably good job on this around the BIP, you know, 44, et cetera. They managed to kind of get a standard that's generally used. And so even if it means that Algorand has to adopt someone else's standard and we go with, I don't know, layer zero standard, or we go with Chainlink standard. I don't like proprietary, but let's just say we go with some mm-hmm. open standard. I think that's worth doing. It's worth doing for the sake of the interoperability, even if it means that the standard that we use is someone else's stack. I would prefer the liquidity is mobile between these chains and that we benefit from that more than I care that our technology is the dominant technology in terms of the interoperable primitive. Even if I think mathematically, okay, this is very, very sexy, or this is very interesting. And I think we should work together as an industry. I would like to think that, like, we could, you know, leaders, if I could say that, across these various blockchains, because of course they're open, so everyone can be a leader, could sit down and have a committee, Cardano, the Ethereums, et cetera, the Solanas, the Avalanches, and basically form on a standard. As an example of where we're on our side eliminating some of the interop friction, Algorand uses 25 words to represent the 256-bit private key that we use for each account. And so Bitcoin and Ethereum use 24 words. And so what we're doing is we're trying to we use a different elliptic curve to Bitcoin and Ethereum. So they use this SecPK1256, and we're using Edwards 25519. And so what we're doing is we're trying to find a way to align key derivation, so using hierarchical key derivation, BIP 44, BIP 31, I think, or 32, I can't remember. We're trying to align to that standard, but do so in a way that works with the elliptic curve that we use. So we've kind of very recently started pushing a standard, which is BIP 44 plus 8255519 key derivation. So we're kind of saying, well, we're going to change at Algorand because we want to be part of the party. We want ledger seeds to work easy peasy. We want the wallets that are on Ethereum, like MetaMask, just to be able to work. We want people who have seeds on Bitcoin to be able to use those seeds on Algorand. And so we're changing the way we do wallets and standardizing it so that we are more interoperable. So it is very much something that we care about.
Very cool. What are some things on your guys' roadmap for the Algorand Foundation for 2024, or just for Algorand's ecosystem in general, that you guys are looking forward to?
Yeah, so beyond the peer-to-peer, the consensus incentives, and of course, the Python release for our smart contract language, it really comes down to building awareness. And so it's about grassroots movement for us. It's, you know, being on every podcast we possibly can come on. Spreading the word that Algorand is an incredible platform on which to build, and growing the user base. At this point, I think, you know, the ingredients are good. You know, we've got nearly a perfect storm. We've got a strong protocol, very robust, very secure. We've got a great developer experience, and the only thing that's missing is nearly like the cult of Algorand. So I'm trying to be the high priest of that. I'm trying to grow that. I mean, of course, we have a diverse strategy across the various sections at the foundation. So we have a strategy for community around how they're going to kind of embrace community, support community, give community love and support the projects that are there. We have BD. So we have a whole business development strategy around how we're going to have grassroots, authentic, not partnerships, but authentic kind of relationships with people and companies that are out there to try to encourage them to build on Algorand, which is easier than it's ever been before. But also, you know, from my point of view, just as an evangelist for the platform, it's just about breaking out of the bubble and doing, you know, shows like this, right? You've got an incredible show, incredible following. I know how popular you guys are, but not really one that's, I would say, within the Algorand ecosystem. It's one that's certainly outside of that, and you are cross-chain. And so really value the opportunity to speak with you and with your users, or sorry, with your viewers, and just try to, you know, bring that awareness. And again, it's not about trying to encourage people to go and buy Algo, or trying to, you know, spread more tribalism, and as in drop your cryptocurrency and come and use this one instead, because that's bullshit. What it is instead is about, hey, you know, here is a platform on which you can build, if you want to build an app that benefits from execution of code in a decentralized context. And if you want to try to use it, because we think we've built something pretty cool as a platform, it's pretty fast and it's pretty good fun to use. We have a very inclusive language you can use, and we have a DevRel team who are there to support you, and maybe, you know, check it out, because as you just said, I think the future is going to be multi-chain, and I want people to have access to the liquidity on our platform, and I want to have access to the liquidity on theirs.
Where can people go to find this cult of Algorand that you're trying to build, maybe like a Discord, Telegram? Where's the community?
Sure. So we have a DevRel Discord. If you just type in Algorand DevRel Discord, it comes straight up on Google. But you can come to algorand.foundation, which is our website. So https://algorand.foundation. There's also algorand.com. We have our developer portal. And then finally, if you have any questions, and this is my favorite, probably the simplest way, on Twitter, I'm @JohnAllenWoods. So that's JohnAllen WOODS. And if you come on Twitter, you can DM me. I will respond. We'll set up time to talk if anyone's interested in learning more. At John Allen Woods on Twitter.
Awesome, John. This has been fantastic. Really happy that you were able to, you know, take the time to come on and talk about what you guys are doing with Algorand at the foundation. Very optimistic about what you guys are going to do here in the near future. I do think you guys have an amazing ecosystem, and I'm very excited to see it, you know, really flourish and come into fruition. So keep up the great work, man.
Thank you so much, man. And thanks for having me on.